extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. From the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Big Show, Huge Show, Josie Altidore's Going to New England Show. Can you believe it? Mark Steinbaum dropped on our heads. We'll talk about it. 3-year guaranteed. Tam, it's incredible. It's wild. It may or may not be wise or brilliant. I don't know. It could go either way. It's got two sides of the apple on that one. All right. Shaqiri to the Fire. That looks like it's going to happen. Darwin Machis to Charlotte FC. Maybe. DC and Toxis on Carlos Tevez. I guess. FC Cincinnati, the first of four teams today going under the microscope as our season previews roll on. They're the spoon holders. Sporting Kansas City don't have a number nine, but they're trying to find one. Portland Timbers got the MLS Cup at home, couldn't win it. Can they do it this year with just one Diego? And we'll talk DC United, who might be in for a regression, plus the best box-to-box midfielders in MLS and international questions in the mailbag. It's all coming up on Extra Time. What's up, guys? Dave, Doyle, it's the All-Star crew. It's the trio. How you feeling? Where you want to start? Do you have something just burning inside?
Yeah, I guess we've been doing our top five rankings for each position, and we did the number six last time. We're on the number eight. We'll obviously move to the number 10. There's three of us here. We're obviously playing a 4-3-3. Who is what?
Yeah. I'm going to say Doyle's the 10. No offense to you, Dave. Mm-hmm. No, some offense to me. He's the magic man.
I just want it understood that I am like a classic South American style, yes, Valderrama number 10 who does not move. You get the ball to my feet. You guys make the runs. I will dime whatever passes are necessary. I will not move.
See, I don't disagree with that, but I also thought you could be a non-ground coverage, non-tackling, like, deep line.
Yes, I had Harris Bedunian in. He's on the mind. We're talking FC Cincinnati. Just back there pinging. I think I'm probably the sixth in this situation, Dave. I think you're more of a do-it-all type of guy. No. Like, are we talking Canada? Are we talking Africa? Are we talking?
I've said it before. I'll say it again. David is the Claude Makélélé of the show. It's just a fact.
So what? I'm just out to go. I'm out to sea at the age. Just like, oh God, what do I do? How do I support this tin who won't move? Thank God I got Dave behind me.
You could be Mark Anthony Kay, looking guys one way, left footed, okay,
and a little bit of cocky caffing to boot up in your grill. All right, I like that. I'll bring the energy. I'm here for it. Look, I guess it's not even a month at this point. It's February 7th. Opening day is February 26th. The first game in CONCACAF Champions League is in about a week. So if you're looking ahead, and we've been going through all these season previews and trying to get you ready for the season, and it's almost impossible when there are 28 teams in this league, here's what's coming. Thursday, we're going to have Ezra Hendrickson on to preview the Chicago Fire, the Revs, Seattle, and Inter Miami. Chris Henderson will join us for that. CCL preview on Monday, February 14th. NYCFC, Montreal with Wilfred Nancy, and the Rapids with Robin Fraser joining us. Then on Thursday, we'll react to CCL. We'll talk Charlotte, Toronto, and RSL. Our prediction show comes on Monday, February 21st, and then we'll do the big extravaganza week one preview on February 24th. There are only five shows, not including this one, so I guess six, until MLS starts for good in 2022. It's going to be crazy. By the way, it is Black History Month. It is February. I hope you're doing some reading. I hope you're just examining our culture and society with a critical eye. Go follow Black Players for Change if you haven't already. There's nothing that we could say or do that they're not saying and doing much, much better on Twitter at BPCMLS. You can donate to them. They're building mini pitches. They're doing so many things. They're supporting a lot of initiatives, including, we'll talk to Robin Fraser about the one, the diversity hiring initiative that went in late last year in Major League Soccer. As part of the MLS Works Black History Month speaker series, the call-up's going to have Miles Robinson and Gianluca Busio this month. We are talking to Wilfred Nancy, Robin Fraser, and Ezra Hendrickson, and happy to do so. So let's hit the preseason headline that might not mean jack. Kevin Cabral, late on Saturday night, balling out on the Revs. 4-0 Galaxy, and Cabral's out here doing backheels, scoring that way. I mean, this is a big result that means nothing, or maybe it means everything. I don't know.
Or maybe it's a small result that means... Something.
This game was at
I'm going to interrupt you, David, and I'm going to say, irrespective of everything else, how confident are you that the David Goss theorem will apply to Kevin Cabral in year two? Like, what is your confidence level? Super strong. So you're like super a strong. 8 out of 10 on that?
Yeah.
Okay. And so what is
good. I feel good. He's a young man finding his way. I don't think he was physically ready for this league. I'm hearing he hit the gym. I'm hearing he heard what Greg Vanney said when he benched him. He got strong. He's ready to roll. He doesn't have to be the best player on the field, right? He just has to be a useful piece, taking players on, filling his spot.
10 goals, 5 assists. Kevin Cabral. 10 goals, 5 assists, that type of year.
Weeby's. I'll say 15 goal.
Okay, so it could be 8 and 7. It could be 9 and 6.
Yeah, way to spin that number. I like that. Yeah, took the exactly. number, put a little, you know, thanks. A little flavor on it.
I feel so strong about this. I'll say this. I bet you by August, Cabral will be playing well enough that Weeby will become the Cabral guy. Because normally I come early, and then when it hits, Weeby's the
yeah,
Cabral.
No, it's the, next it, the way it works. Guy. Nobody listens that's back to podcasts. As we, well, yeah. Some people do. We're finding out, but nobody listens back and tracks you. So yeah. I can just come in at any point and be like, and that's where you get mad, and it's perfect for me. It's a great back and forth. I'm like, I don't know what you're back, talking dude. About.
Everyone knows you're the exactly. You're the yeah. Curacao guy. Everyone
you're lucky
knows
I even
that.
Gave you the David Goss theorem. That could have been the Andrew Weeby theorem. I could have taken that for myself. That's and you know, true. You know, I gave it to you.
J. Sam Jones no, does not listen to the show, though. He wrote a whole article
yeah, it
about
whack.
It.
It was whack. We need data much. On that, by the way. I'd love for somebody to go out and comb through and like, does it actually apply, or did we just completely make this thing up? All right, let's talk about the news. Let's start with Josie Altidore to the Revs on TAM. It is not official. Mark Stein started the reporting, and then everybody else piled on between Taylor Twellman, Tom Bogert, Jeff Carlisle, etc. What has come out now is that it's going to be a 3-year guaranteed TAM deal for Josie Altidore. Again, I repeat. This is not done official. There's no press release, nothing like that. I'm told that he is in LA right now working all that stuff out. Josie Altidore is. That's where the Revs are. Of course, that's where they lost to the Galaxy. I had tried to speak into existence Orlando City. That didn't happen. Erkin Kara was that guy. And by the way, in preseason news, that might not mean Jack. He got taken off with an injury, but they're just saying that's an ankle twist. No big deal there. I had thrown out the Colorado Rapids. That's not going to happen. Apparently, they don't have a ton of budget for that number 9 spot that they're chasing afterwards. It was a quest, said Porg Smith. And if you don't have a ton of budget, it is a quest to go get a good number 9. But the Revs and Bruce Arena goes back to the well here. This is what Bruce does, Doyle. When he's on teams he thinks he can win championships with, he goes and gets guys he's familiar with. I mean, this offseason for the Revs is like Sebastian Legette and Omar Gonzalez and now reportedly Josie. What do you think of... What's that?
Is he familiar with Josie? I get they're both U.S. soccer royalty, but he coached him. The only time would have been when he took over after
early
Jürgen
days
Klinsmann,
Red Bulls.
Right?
That's correct.
I think
early
Josie
days Red
was
Bulls
drafted,
and then for a year.
I mean, that wasn't a long period anyway, but you know, a formative time for a young man.
So he had one year with the start with Josie, maybe a year and a half at the start with Josie, and then he had. A year with the national team with Josie when Josie was kind of at the tail end of, you know, what his prime essentially. So there's a really good level of familiarity there. And it's worth remembering, Josie was really good in qualifying under Bruce. He couldn't put the ball in the net, but he had like 6 assists in 6 games under Bruce. And he played setting up Pulisic. And the game before Kuva, everybody forgets this, that was supposed to be the big one. It was the game against Panama, and the U.S. just steamrolled them. And I thought that's the best game Josie's ever played in national team colors. If there's something left in the tank for him, hopefully for him and for Bruce and for Revs fans, they can find it. And it would be really fun to see Josie in kind of an El Seno role. 30, 35 minute a game super sub who can change the game, only, you know, worry about starting him 10 times a year. Like that would be pretty devastating.
I think you have for the Revs is a good situation for this. Some people out there are going to raise their eyebrows at 3 years guaranteed. And yeah, I'm one of them. You know, with the injury history that Josie has, like you have to be a little bit skeptical, especially playing half his games on turf, that he can hold up in that way. But the side of me that just wants to abandon all reason or logic and just be excited is there. Like, I am giddy about this. I think it's a perfect situation for Josie, like TBD on the Revs. That comes down to Josie's health and if his body can hold up. But for the Revs, they tried to sell Adam Bukes at this window. That seems like it was the goal, and they didn't get the offer they wanted. And it seems like basically, like, put the money in the bank in the summer. It's going to happen in the summer. So if they wanted to reinforce, they couldn't go get a DP right now. So you get Josie on a TAM contract. Okay, so you have 6 months, including CCL, to chase that. You have 6 months to integrate Josie. You have 6 months to let his body get up to fitness, hopefully 90 minutes. Then you sell Bukes in the summer. Josie comes into that spot. You still have Gustavo Bo. You still have an MVP and Carlos Hill behind him. Oh, now, by the way, you have another fee, more discretionary spend, and you have a DP spot. Maybe you go get a winger, a Tejon Buchanan replacement, so to speak. Go to South America. Go to Liga MX. Whatever you want to do. And now it's Josie's time to step into that role. And look, I mean, he's only 32. I know he's had a ton of injury issues. He's also basically had 2 years where he hasn't put hardly any miles on his legs. Why not? Like, it could happen. And if it doesn't, you still have that DP spot that you could go replace. You could do what Toronto FC are doing at a much lower number. You could still buy him out. But for Josie, you're going to get this guy in a uber-motivated state. Like this year, he has everything to play for. Yeah. You cannot tell me that the number nine for the U.S. is locked in.
Yeah,
like the depth chart's like four or five guys deep, and Greg seems to be just sort of cycling through. There's not, if Josie is healthy and productive for the Revs, let's say he plays that super sub role for the first 6 months, do he's playing 30, 35 minutes in that role on this Revs teams, he's gonna score goals. He's gonna have big moments. Okay, awesome. Let's say Bukes gets sold, he moves into the starting lineup. Why heading into Qatar wouldn't he be an option if he's productive and healthy?
It's a really good point.
Why wouldn't he be? I mean, you want him to play that like drop in false nine, sort of like let the wingers run off him. I'm sorry, he's better at that than anybody else in the U.S. pool.
Yeah,
he's a better like goal scoring in the box forward, I think, than anybody in this U.S. pool.
I think, yeah. I enjoy this conversation because I enjoy the idea that Josie will rise again from the ashes. I also think the motivation should start with proving to himself and MLS that he
for sure
play. Like, you're on the national team.
Yeah,
he hasn't played soccer in 2 years. So you're taking a jump here. I also don't know that he's a starter when they sell Buxa, because I don't know that they'll play two forwards in that way. I think that's part of the opportunity to sell Buxa. And you talk about getting a winger and potentially being a 4-3-3 and having Boo up there. Whatever it is, I don't know that all of that should be the main conversation. But this sort of looks similar to what we saw with Bradley Wright Phillips and Kevin Molino last year for Columbus, of like, this is now the change with free agency and eligibility of teams that look ready to win now, bringing a guy in that has been there, that understands what it takes and can be that little bit of topper. Josie Altidore doesn't need to be a DP on this team. He doesn't need to be a leader. He doesn't need to be the best player on the field. He just needs to be able to be healthy enough to fill his role. And if he can do that, this is a team that struggled at times offensive against NYCFC in the playoffs.
By the way, on the DP front, I've been trying to figure this out. I cannot figure out the mechanism that would allow him to make this move post buyout. Because if you think back to like Fernando Adi a couple years back, he had to go through waivers. Based on everybody I've talked, I don't think he's going through waivers in this situation. I don't know. But we talk about, oh, he's not a DP. For Josie, it's a perfect situation. Like, he's about to get paid for 2 years with Toronto, 22 and 23 at DP money, and get max TAM from the Revs over the course of those 2 years as well, and then get paid the next year guaranteed. This is a no-brainer for Josie Altidore. Like you run to sign that contract, and you run to sign a contract with Bruce Arena too, who understands, I think, probably better than at least most MLS managers how to manage him, how to keep him fresh. Like, what pressure to put him under and his body? There is no pressure for Josie in this situation. There's very little pressure for Bruce either. Like, he doesn't care what people think.
And let me make two more points here. First, this makes a lot of sense for a team that thinks, I think justifiably, that they're close to doing something historic. Whether that means CCL or winning the first MLS Cup for the Revs, both of those are potentially on the table. And so if you're going to take a swing, you take the swing now. It makes complete sense. That's one. Two is the Revs, physio staff did such a great job with Carlos Hill getting hit. He's had so many muscle injuries over the year. He missed most of 2020. He came back in 2021 as an MVP. So maybe there's a little bit of a secret
sauce. And came back from a hernia surgery mid-season to continue that MVP.
So it's like they have – whatever they're doing with their trainers and that staff, it's working really well. The Revs missed very few games last – lost very few man hours to injuries last year, especially with the condensed schedule. Maybe that's the secret sauce that Josie needs to – get his hamstrings healthy. I know the most recent injury was a foot injury, and that's a little worrying on turf, but like there's a lot of reasons to think that this can work for him, not just from a soccer perspective, but from a physical perspective.
And I think the biggest part of why this move makes sense to all of us is if it doesn't work, the Revs are still competitive. It would be dangerous for a team if he became the center forward for Orlando. Orlando would be in a situation where if they didn't bring in the DP they did bring in because they brought in Josie, if he gets hurt, if he can't play, they can't contend. For the Revs, if that's the case, they can still be competitive.
It's a bonus.
With the players they have.
It's a bonus. It's high. It is high risk. I'm not going to argue with anybody about that. Given Josie's injury history, it could blow up. Like his body just might not be able to do it. You know, that's part of the risk.
But that's why you have Justin Renick on a roster. Come on.
Perfect, guys. That's why you take the risk to see if you can. But it's very high ceiling as well. And if you're looking for somebody to get the most out of, again, like veteran guy at nearing the end of his career, Bruce has made his career out of doing that. Like he gets a lot out of those guys. That's just go back and look at the championship teams in LA. Go back and look at some of those DC teams. Those are not all young guys. Like, Bruce gets it. And so, I'm just excited because this league is way better with a healthy Josie in it. From a player perspective, from a personality perspective, he has heft that most players simply don't have. And for the U.S. national team, it's not a light at the end of the tunnel. I wanted to mix that metaphor, but I couldn't think of a good one. There's something there. If you're Greg Berhalter, you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to be watching this one. Maybe he can be the Sherpa for all these young guys. Maybe he finally gets that international tournament on the big stage where, you know, knock on wood, injuries don't kill him. So I'm excited for it. It's not done yet, but it seems like it's going to get done. We'll watch that very, very closely. Meanwhile, Toronto FC signed a Spanish forward out of the Polish league because that's where every forward comes these days. Jesus Jimenez, 28. Bob says he's a combination of excellent movement and dribbling. So we'll see what that means. He's scored double digits there in 2 years. Shaqiri to the Fire. That looks like it's going to happen. Level of excitement on that one, Doyle, 1 to 10.
A solid 7. Yeah, he seems to fit a lot of what the Fire need in terms of making a signing that excites the fan base. If he's healthy and good to go, 90 minutes a game and could, you know, put in 2,500 minutes, I think you play him inside as kind of a right-sided number 10. And they have the defensive solidity behind him between Navarro and Jimenez to let him be that guy. And then you go out and you get a speedy stretch-the-lines winger with that other open DP slot that they have. If they're able to get those two things done, this looks really good for the Fire. It looks really, really good for the Fire. But also, Shaqiri hasn't played more than 1,500 minutes in a season since, what, 2018? 2020?
And even then, now, he granted, wasn't a starter.
Yeah, a but it's a different sub. Level, right? Like MLS is on the come up, but it's not that level. Still, though, that's a little bit worrisome.
You're saying FC Cincinnati is not at Liverpool's level? Or
we're
City's
talking about
level?
Chicago come Fire? On. Not FC City. Anyway,
same general band recently.
Yeah. So it's a 7 out of 10. It looks like a really, really good signing. It shows ambition that the fans are happy about. But I also think that we're seeing within that roster, there's a better structure than there was last year or 2 years ago. And that is giving me some long-term hope for this Fire team.
I still think that, he is.
He's a game changer. He's a dominator. He's just, it has to be, for a guy of his quality, it has to be game in and game out. And his story for a long time now has been when he's on, he's unplayable, and he's only on once every 4 or 5 games. And that's why he ends up at clubs like Liverpool, where he's not a starter. And that's what you see with Switzerland. And I've seen him twice in the World Cup in person. Once he had a hat trick. The other one he laid down and was, you could barely see him in the game, and they lost to Sweden with an opportunity to go to the quarterfinals. Now, obviously, that's a high level, but that's what you're talking about with Shaqiri. But when he's on, I mean, as a neutral, a guy like this in the league, oh my God, he's going to, every other week, he's going to eat a defender alive, and it's going to go all over the place. So it's going to be fun, and it is exciting, and I think it's fair for Chicago fans to feel like maybe this was the moment.
It's not done yet, but again, it looks like it's on its way. You have the Tom Bogert vote of approval. You have Fabrizio Romano out there saying, yeah, this is about to get done as well. And for Fire fans, it's got to feel good because they've been accustomed to, hey, we're going to make the move. DP slot's going to get filled. It's going to be a big signing. And then crickets. This time it seems like
this guy will probably be better than Ignacio Aliceta. I'll say that. Shaqiri, probably better.
But he might go to Switzerland. He might go to Switzerland afterward, you know? It might be the same path eventually. Darwin Machis to Charlotte FC, the Venezuela international, been at Granada for a minute now, had some really good moments in La Liga. He would go on left wing for them. He could certainly be a difference maker, a guy that's big on the dribble, big on the cross, scores some golazos. A lot of that seems to match up with Swiderski, like getting him service in the box and what this team needs. They still have a DP spot open too, so you're still waiting on both the Fire and Charlotte to figure out what's going on there. I mentioned the Rapids, kind of joked about it. They're still looking for their 9, but it's not, I don't know. It hasn't happened yet, so I'll believe it when I see it. How about Carlos Tevez to DC? You got Pablo Maurer and Felipe Cardenas reporting this one, and it seems like they're saying he's in talks to sign, but it's probably not going to happen, so it's like one of those sort of...
They said 25% likely. So we'll talk about this more during the team preview because we're doing DC today.
That's true. You're right. NYCFC signed a DP this morning. Thiago Martins from Japanese sister club within the City family. Yokohama F. Marinos. Are they going to play 3 in the back, or is this just we needed another center back, and because we have good enough attacking players, we don't have to fill a DP spot with that? And oh, by the way, he can be bought down with Tam if we ever needed to anyway.
I think it's the second thing. I think this is like... No, there was. He kept it concise, man. It was really well. It was really well done. Nice. It's the second thing, right? They only had 2 even remotely proven center backs on the roster. One of them, Chanot, is I think turning 33 soon. Collins is you know, he's a full Peruvian international, so his workload is pretty heavy. They needed to add another guy there. Now, whether Martins comes in and immediately starts or sort of rotates in when these guys need a rest, it remains to be seen, but he's a really well-regarded player from what I understand. I don't watch a lot of J League, but talk to people, a couple of the quants over there were like, yeah, he's a good one. But that the thing is, as you said, Weeby, they have like Tati Castellanos is not a DP, you know, like they don't, because they've done so well developing guys like that, they don't have to go out and spend big to juice the attack. The attack is already juiced, and that allows them to use nominally the most high-profile roster mechanism to bring in potentially a third center back. It's not the way it was designed 15 years ago, but... I'm like, if I'm an NYCFC fan, I'm okay with this because clearly center back was the biggest issue, the biggest area of need for this team.
And by the way, they have 3 U22 players that probably cost what in the neighborhood of 15 million, 17 million combined.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, NYCFC, they're not spending. They're just using different roster mechanisms in different ways. And Maxi Morales re-signed as well. He's under that. Like can be bought down with TAM threshold too. So there is still flexibility for NYCFC to go out and make some moves. Sebastian Jovinko, he is not going to be in MLS this year. He headed back to Serie A. Didn't work out with Toronto FC, apparently. So that's a bummer. And it sounds like Sebastian Blanco is going to sign a 2-year TAM deal with the Timbers. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. Anything else bumping around in the news zone before we hit FC Cincinnati? I'll take that as a no. Yeah, I'll take it as a no. All right, FC Cincinnati, here we go. Start the timer, Anders. 2021, the haiku. Beaten and humbled. 2 years, 2 spoons, and yet hope. anything will do. Well, guess anything was maybe a wrong choice of words from me, and not anything would do, but here's their 2022. Deja vu, again. How many spoons in a set? Last is a lifestyle. Jeez. And in MLS, it is their lifespan so far. Like it's three spoons in 3 years.
Diss track from Weeby, my God.
Yeah, I mean, they make it easy. They make it easy. Key signings. Alakon, goalkeeper, seemed like a good one. They pulled Ray Gattis out of retirement for one last job, says Anders. John Nelson came over from FC Dallas. Alvis Powell came over from Philly. Dominic Badji came over from the Rapids. That doesn't feel like it's going to be enough.
It's not going to be.
This is the first offseason for Chris Albright, by the way, who came over as well from Philadelphia.
It's not going to be enough, but it is a massive start for this team because Alec Khan is going to represent the biggest upgrade at one position of anybody coming into MLS this year. This is a bigger upgrade, Alec Khan, over what Cincinnati have had in goal for the past 3 years than Insignia will be over Achara. Just like if you watched any Cincinnati over the past 3 years, they were a terrible team, but the team on the field was in no way, shape, or form as bad as whatever was happening in goal for them. Like, just 3 years of the worst goalkeeping I have ever seen. Alec Khan is not Matt Turner. He's not Andre Blake. He's not going to win goalkeeper of the year, but he's a really, really, really good shot stopper. There's a lot of data on him doing that job really well, both with Atlanta United and at the USL level. If he is just an average MLS keeper, that's like 8 or 10 more points for FC Cincinnati this year. And that is a huge improvement just from one position. It's a very good start. Very good start in rebuilding this team.
Here's the bad news for FC Cincinnati. 8 more points, they'd still have the spoon from last year. I just had to throw it out. I mean, 20 points. They won 4 games.
Behind
they had a negative 37 goal differential. It's almost unfathomable.
Did they win a
they
home
won
game
one.
In the end?
Yeah,
they did win a home game, right?
Did it for the... Yeah. Yeah, God, we're just so much... The energy from the march that day must have been immaculate. It must have just spread through the stadium.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys know. Weeby went on a pregame march with FC Cincinnati.
Someday I'll bring my son, a little father-son bonding there. Lucho Acosta, star spotlight. 31 games for this team, 2,700 minutes, 7 goals, 10 assists. He was by far and away, Dave, the best player on FC Cincinnati by far. In fact, he was one of the best number 10s in the entire league, and I think that was a really pleasant surprise given his time at Atlas. Hadn't been Lucharoo-esque, let's say.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and he proved also from his MLS days, where on a team that struggled, on a team where he was sort of left alone at times, could he carry them and put up numbers? Because his best moments were when Wayne Rooney was on the field, and there's no Wayne Rooney on this Cincinnati team, and he showed that he could. And I think just from a pure effort level of what you saw last year was a huge bonus of, okay, this is a guy who will put his head down and work for us, even with the points that we are behind everyone else. And I think that's a good starting point now for Pat Noonan to come in and be able to work with him. And obviously there'll be expectations defensively of him that weren't there before. And I think you saw Lucho Acosta, who's open to that and willing to be the leader for this team. And if he can have an effective year again, I like moments I've seen from Barrial. I like moments I've seen from Matanga. If he can draw some sort of focus there, give those guys opportunities to get 1v1. Again, this is not a team that's going to win MLS Cup, but they are a team that should be better than they were last year. And I think Lucho Acosta, you should expect the same numbers.
What do you think Noonan's going to do formation-wise, Doyle? Like, how do you get the best... Okay.
They have a million forwards.
What's that mean for, like...
Right?
Yeah, so what's that mean? I mean, I think Atanga's a winger, sort of, yeah. Right? Like, Calvin Harris is a winger. Yeah. Like, what? So, and they don't have... We'll get to the question in a bit. They don't... There are a lot of question marks in midfield. So, yeah. I don't even know if I have a question other than, like, how's that going to work?
I don't know, but I do think it'll be a diamond. I do expect them to resemble what Philly have done the past two or three years. Chris Albright has some roster surgery to do with this group. And that might mean they discover that Atanga is actually really good as a second forward. It might mean that Barrial becomes a number 10 and competes with Lucho for playing time. Or it might mean that both those guys...
Lucho could be a second forward, I guess. Yeah, like you could just...
Right? It might mean that none of them factor. And, you know, Atanga and Barrial are shopped around the league or outside of the league. And you get what you can. Like, Atanga was a pretty highly rated guy coming into MLS. When Cincinnati signed him, a few people reached out to me and were like, yeah, they did a good job here. They got a kid with a lot of potential. He hasn't shown it because the structure with Cincinnati has been so poor. And maybe it'll end up not being the right fit for him long term. But there would still be interest in him, I think, because he's that kind of talent.
He's only...
You know who fits perfectly in this diamond? Yuya Kubo gets to play higher up the field than where he's played in the past. This dude got signed as a DP attacker, and he led them in recoveries last year.
I don't think he's going to play higher. If he's still on this roster, what? I think, yeah, he'll be a shuttler,
on the side of the diamond. But that's still higher than the six he played for most of last year. And he'll probably fit it pretty well.
He's a high energy, smart player.
I don't hate that.
Since he's got a lot of work, he's still got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, look, we have 22 under 22 players to watch. They don't truly have a 22 under 22 player to watch. I mean, Roman Celentano, he might fit into that category, but it's...
I think he turns 22.
Okay, so that's like everybody on the roster. There's a bunch of 21-year-olds. I mean, Isaac Atanga is one of them. He had a goal and two assists in about 1,000 minutes last year. Barrial is another one of those guys. He had three goals and three assists in 2,200 minutes. Calvin Harris, who was a top draft pick for them, is another one of those guys who turns 22 this year, so not technically eligible. But, like, there's a lot of question marks. Like, where do they fit? And the mailbag question is basically running on that, which is Will Parker saying, where is the midfield? They got rumored additions out there. You know, maybe Emma Boateng, maybe Felipe Martins if he doesn't go to Austin. So he went to Austin this morning. Is that official? Is that done? Okay, so not Felipe Martins. Maybe Chris Durkin comes back if they can get that allocation slot. Maybe Johnny Cardoso or just Johnny or however he's going these days from Internacional in Brazil. What?
He actually goes by Anakin now. It's Anakin and Jedi. Sorry, that was a bad joke. I should have.
Apology not accepted.
I'll see myself out.
Let's see. Let's try to just build the midfield out in the diamond. So the six is they bought out the South African guy they got from the Netherlands.
Okay.
They bought him out. So
is Harris Madunyanin.
I have Madunyanin, I have Alan Cruz, and I have Kubo.
So the issue is Cruz should fit as a shuttler. Like he could be really good in that spot. He covers a ton of ground. He's pretty clean right when he wins the ball. But you might have no choice but to play him at the six if you have no other pieces in there. Which, as we've just expressed, they kind of don't, except a retirement age Harris Madunyanin. If you play him there, Kubo and Cruz have to protect him. And they've been incapable of protecting their back line over the course of their time in MLS. You have Jeff Cameron, who has at least settled now, right? He doesn't have to start in the middle of the year, and Viasia as well. So you're hoping you're more settled along the back line. John Nelson, a solid piece as well. Maybe you can risk starting the year with Harris Madunyanin at the six. It is, I would say it's almost insane, except it's FC Cincinnati and might not be a downgrade from last year.
How about this? Over under, Doyle. 10.5 goals for Brenner. He had 8 goals last season in many minutes, a lot of minutes. He played. He might have played over 3,000 minutes and had 8 goals. A lot of money spent for him. 10.5. That's the number we put on this one.
David Goss theorem. Right. If Brenner David Goss theorems 2022, he'll end up with 11, 12 goals.
This might feel like the ultimate test of the David Goss theorem.
I would like to say there's a clause, little asterisk, about FC Cincinnati in the theorem. It doesn't.
Oh, it only applies if you've had the same coach from last year.
Oh, right. Yeah,
so FC Cincinnati naturally doesn't benefit from the David Goss theorem.
I'm going to take the over anyway. Are you guys taking the over?
I'm going to take the over too. And I don't have any logic whatsoever for it, other than I hope the best for young Brenner, who came from Brazil and plopped down in Cincinnati onto a a team that won its third straight wooden spoon.
I'll say,
so I just hope for good things for him.
He and Vasquez looked a lot better playing together down the stretch last year in that two forward setup. So maybe that bodes well for 2022.
We have a "This is fine" meme that we do, obviously, you know, the dog drinking the coffee amid the fire, but that dog is just FC Cincinnati. So I don't think we have to go through what could happen, what the concerns or the weaknesses or the pitfalls are. They've shown us.
Okay. The nice thing for them is you could feel really good about this season and you don't have to accomplish that much, right? Just get another year passed on some of these contracts you don't want to be a part of, be competitive, win a couple home games. Like there's a very clear path to being positive in September and October about this team's reality. And there's an opportunity there, and that's what Chris Albright's there to do. Look at what Chris Henderson's doing in Miami. Like, it's not that dissimilar. Chris Albright just has to get his hands around what the cap looks like, what the contracts look like, and start to move on. But as Doyle went on in the beginning, all he had to do was sign Alec Khan over the international goalkeepers that have been filling their spot, and they've already improved.
Wow. Well, do I ask why You're it could welcome. Be their year? How about just predictions? What do you like, not in your heart, like you hope for them, like realistically, what's the prediction, Doyle?
Miss the playoffs, not particularly close to making it, but don't win the wooden spoon.
Yeah. Yeah. I think just having a product that they can be proud of, it may not be a playoff product yet, but a feeling that Albright and Noonan have made tangible progress, and that there's more of a process in place across the sporting side of the club. Because if you look at the leadership changes, the roster changes, and the result, I don't know that you can't say trust the process. Like, if there isn't a process, and it doesn't feel like there's been a process, so maybe this year is just like have a process for FC Cincinnati. All right.
So if you're saying they're not going to win the wooden spoon, that means you think a different team's going to win the wooden spoon.
Yeah.
And that's
we're talking about DC
right?
later
I think
so.
Okay, on to Sporting Kansas City we go. 2021, good year in, year out. Credit where credit is due, but it's trophy time. Well, that was predicated on Alan Pulido and the talent level they had. And look, they almost did it. Like, they had a really good team, really good season last year. One of the best attacks in the league with Pulido in and out of the lineup. MVP candidates in both Johnny Russell and Daniel Shalloway. Andre Fontas came good. Like, it was a good season for Kansas City. It just didn't result in a trophy. Now, for 2022, tough luck, SKC. Could the number 9 be cursed? Can't wait for Leagues Cup. And that last line is mostly just for me and also for KC fans that hate Leagues Cup. Like, you know, just carve out a little spot in your heart for it, all right? You're going to be in it. Just enjoy it. But they don't have a number 9. They're trying to get one. Both Brian Bliss, the technical director, and Peter Vermees, of course, the soccer czar, have said, look, we've got the roster space. We've got budget set aside. We are on our horse trying to get this thing done. There's been a lot of names that have floated through. Robert Berich, of course, was the reentry flyer. That didn't work out. He didn't agree that that was the best thing for him. Reportedly, by Jeff Carlisle's reporting, they were in for Josie Altidore. That didn't work out for them either. JJ Macias has been one that they've really been linked to recently. It seems like he's going to stay at Chivas. Again, Kansas City doesn't have a DP spot, so that's probably a part of that one for them. But they've got to find a number 9. Key signings, couple left backs. Ben Sweat within the league. Logan Ndembe, he's a 21-year-old U22 signing. Robert Volader is a center back, the German center back. I think he's a U22 signing for them as well, sort of the next gen and some quality depth there. Uri Rossell is back. And Marinos Tazonis is in from Cyprus on the wing. He's a U22 signing as well. So they filled up their U22 spots, but they don't have the number 9. We'll talk about that more down the line here. How about the signings that they did make?
I like what they did. They needed to improve left back. They need to get more attack down there to make Shalloway's life easier, to allow him to come in field and to continue to create more chances. They create a ton of chances, but I think they can be even better in that spot, and you can get more solid defensively. And then they bring in another winger, but this is a Sporting KC team that towards the end of the year wasn't even using subs. So you just bring in more depth on those wings, create a little bit more versatility, and then a center back at a young age who's got an unbelievable resume. I'm talking about a German youth international like a couple months ago, playing for the German U21s, then went over oddly played in Slovenia for Maribor, who we've seen Jan Kolmich, Kolmich for Austin come from. And then he ends up here. It is one of the weirder routes a player has ended up in MLS, but that's sort of Peter Vermees, right? He's got a ton of contacts. He's always looking. He's always talking. And then you bring in a player where I thought when Ismail Marin was on the field, they showed that they could be a backline that could contend for MLS Cup if the attack's there. He was not on the field consistently. You don't know if Fontas will be as well a second year. So I think you bring in a young player who, if you need minutes, you can get them. But if not, someone you can develop into becoming a starter on the team. So I really like what Sporting KC did. In this is how you should really use these spots. They're sort of gambles you can take to be able to fill in behind.
I think the David Goss theorem is going to apply to Jose Mari. They really like him at the six. I think Rossell is more like is more depth for them, but they really like Mari. So that's a guy to watch as far as that one goes, like a signing from last year in the summer that maybe is going to come good for them this year as well. Let's do the star spotlight, and it's two guys. It's Daniel Shallowy and Johnny Russell. Doyle, I'm not sure that there's a team that has two better wingers in this league than them. Shallowy, 16 goals, 8 assists in 2,500 minutes. Russell, 15 and 8 in about 2,200 minutes. I mean, when these guys are cooking, they're almost unstoppable.
Yeah, 47 combined goals and assists. That's a really good, really good year from those wingers. They might have to do it again. And that's the worry looking at this Sporting KC team, especially without the number 9, is like the goals pretty much have to come from those guys. And it's not just the lack of number 9. It's like this team isn't really a set-piece threat. You know, like they don't have center backs who will come up and between them get 6-7 goals on the year. They don't have, you know, a tricky dribbler out of midfielder who's going to win penalties, that sort of thing. And Gadi Kinda does a nice job with those box-arriving runs and one-time finishes, but he's not, you know, he's not Lucho Acosta out there, you know, burying guys at the top of the box and then drawing fouls. So, like, it has to come down to Shallowy and Russell. And to their credit, last year they were both best 11 caliber. Like, they both had monstrous seasons, like Nacho Piatti level seasons. And that's really, really good. We know that, look, Russell's at the end of his prime. It's probably too much to ask 15 and 8 from him again. You know, 12 and 6 would be a really nice year. With Shallowy, he's just entering his prime. And we've seen him have good years before and then fall off hard. The real test for him is going to be, like, can he take this, it hit 90% of this level again? I'm not even asking for more from Daniel Shallowy. I'm asking, like, give me 90% of what you gave in 2022 and then hope, or in 2021. And then hopefully the other pieces somehow, you know, Peter Vermees can wizard something together and make it all work as a contiguous whole.
And what I like about what Daniel Shallowy, I think, shifted in his game from he had that big year to struggles and then back last year was just being simpler in his finishing, just putting things on target. It felt like for a while he'd cut in from the left and everything would be top corner. And it wouldn't hit the goal most of the time. And so now you look at Shallowy, who way overperformed his expected goals last year. But a lot of that is because he just put a ton of opportunities on frame and then let something happen from there. And as Doyle said, they're going to need these guys to do that again. I trust Russell, even at his age, more than Shallowy, just because we've seen it over and over again from him. But the expectation is you need probably 25, 26 goals combined between the two of them for this team to be competitive.
I think you also need a little bit more from Gadi Kinda as well. He's been really good in flashes, in moments over the course of his 2 years. He's had some injury issues at times. Last year, 5 goals, 8 assists in about 2,000 minutes. If you can get him up into the 2,500-minute zone and, you know, get him to 15 combined and make him more of an attacking threat, that's going to help a lot. Well, 2022, the player to watch we have is Logan Ndimbi. He's the left back they signed from Ligue 2 in France. He's a projected starter at left back. We kind of went over that. I think stretching the field, being a little bit more athletic than Martins was, that's going to be a big bonus for them. We'll see if the scouting works out. But the mailbag question.
Do you want to make the same complaint I make about SKC every time they go come for up? It. Real quick. They tout how many homegrowns they sign, and yet we're talking about an overseas signing at left back at 21 years old because they don't play them. I would love to see some of the players that they're so excited about get an opportunity to play soccer.
I think right back might be a spot for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe Pierre gets some time for Zusi. He's really highly rated. Yep. Right back. I don't know.
Yep.
Maybe Duke gets more time this year.
I'd like
in
to
the
see
midfield.
Cam
He's shown some real flashes.
Time. Yeah. Yep. And I like Felipe Hernandez too. We know he had those issues, off-field issues last season, but he's back. He's reinstated. He's a really good two-way, kind of a mini Roger Espinoza in central midfield or midfield, just a bulldog out there. Those guys could all factor. It would be great to see one of them, have a Gianluca Busio type rise into a starting spot.
Tyler Freeman is another one I'll throw out there. He probably wouldn't be a starter, but like in spot minutes on the wing, maybe off the bench. Of course, Peter doesn't often go to the bench, it seems, but we will see about that. Mailbag question goes back to the same old, people very calm about this. Is Brendan Funesti says, is Sporting Kansas City's season ruined? No true number nine, causing PV to rotate
guys
at that spot again.
Is Brendan Funesti Joel Wiebe's pen name?
No, Joel, you know,
Joel would
like
be
him,
asking
like
about
him or
Zusi.
Love him.
He would be asking about Zusi.
Yeah, he would. He definitely would. He'd be going all in there. Luke May says, who will KC get to help with the striker situation, and could you throw out suggestions? We certainly could throw out some suggestions. Looks like they're combing the entire world for it at this point. I mean, they were linked with guys in the Swiss League. Of course, we've talked through the other rumors prior to now. If you had to throw out some names in league, Ola Kamara was on the trade block. We just talked about FC Cincinnati. They have a lot of forwards, and it seems like, you know, maybe Brandon Vasquez would be a guy that you could bring in to spell Kyrie Shelton or to split with him. Danny Musovski is one that I would go back to. I mean, they have Chicho Arango in LAFC, and Musovski's been productive. Basically, anytime he's got minutes, he's not like a luxury player, but he will grind and do some work, and he will he'll find his way in front of goal and finish a decent amount of them. Those are just some names I've thrown out there. I don't know. I'm sure that Kansas City has knocked on every door within the league. And maybe it just comes down to preseason and teams figuring out, okay, well, this guy he's surplus. I think we could move him on. But those are just some names I'd throw out there. Any others you have?
I would go talk to RSL and just say Rubin, Wood, guys like that. Sorry. Douglas Martinez. They're guys that were signed before you got the ownership group.
Yeah.
Now you're bringing in other talent. I'm not sure that any of them are the perfect fit, but can you get them and say, hey, here's an opportunity to open up a roster spot for you and a chance for us to give those guys minutes. Everyone we're naming is a step down from Pulido. That's just the reality. So you just have to do what you can to sort of...
I'll just say...
Kai is in Kansas City.
Musovski is the snuggest fit, just because he's used to playing in a 4-3-3 off of like super ball dominant wingers. His movement in the box is good. He's not going to do the Pulido playmaking stuff, but if Sporting play it straight, he shouldn't have to. All you have to do is be in the right spot when you have wingers like Russell and Shalloway and then a very good midfield behind.
They should call FC Dallas. Frank O'Hara might be.
Oh, I just said, I mean, Kai Kamara just got back from AFCON. He's a KC resident. I'm just throwing it out there. Maybe that's not going to work with him and Peter again, but you might get a little desperate. The over and under here was on 9.5 goals from the center forward spot. That's total because Kyrie Shelton played, he started like 25 games last year and he scored 3 goals. It's not a harsh on Kyrie. That's not who he is.
Good player.
He's just not.
Not
He's
a good goal
player.
Score.
He's not. Yes, correct. 9.5 goals from center forward spot. Over, under.
I'm going to say over. I think this team's too competitive for PV and SKC to stand pat at that position. I think that there'll be someone in that team that's capable of scoring 6 goals, 7 goals over the course of the season by the
end. This is fine meme. What's the rug that could get pulled out? Is it the 9? Is it more defensively? It's probably more defensively.
It's more defensively, especially if PV doesn't rotate. Like, we know he's not going to sub, but there should be more depth, especially if the new German kid is as good as his resume suggests he is. Ramiz has to get him in there and give Fontas especially a break, because the Fontas that we saw through like mid-August was so much better than the Fontas that we saw from like mid-August to the end of the season. He just couldn't keep up anymore. He was dead, and now he's in his mid-30s. So there has to be a great deal more load management this year. And if there's not, it's hard to imagine sporting season ending any other way than it has repeatedly over the past decade, essentially, which is the back line just gets to a point where they look exhausted and they can't keep up and they get gashed.
You need Izzy Marine to stay healthy for that, by the way, too.
Yep.
You can't rotate if you have a guy out for most of the season. Quick predictions. I know we just ignored that buzzer per normal, but Andre says keep it quick, so we'll keep it quick. This is a playoff team, but what sort of playoff team?
A home game.
Okay, top four? They were three for me. Last year, 58 points, had an opportunity down the stretch, couldn't take advantage. Nashville comes into the West, which complicates things. But
yeah, I questioned it last year. A few people told me this in preseason, and they were right. They will play harder than most people throughout the regular season. They will get results. And I'm not saying there's not talent there. There is talent. But in terms of results over the course of regular season, the home environment they have, the atmosphere they've built, the culture they have, they'll get points. They'll be a top 14.
And by the way, they could be better at home, too. They were 9-3-5. You just turn a couple of those draws into wins, and you'll be there. I agree with you. I think it's a top 14. I don't think they will win the West, but I think they'll be in that 2-4 zone if I had to put it down somewhere. All right. We'll just assume that you agree, Doyle. Yeah. You have your finger up. Dave, what's up?
No, I thought I was waiting for Doyle. No,
playoffs,
hit or miss on
playoffs, no home game.
Okay. All right. Portland Timbers, 2021. Go tell Father Time that Diego's never age in this, the Rose City. 2022, one Diego left, Blanco on a single knee. Cup dreams still alive? I mean, they were there. They were almost there. They had the moment. They had the tying goal, and it just couldn't quite get it over the line last year against NYCFC. Key signings, they've signed many goalkeepers, which we'll talk about later. David Bingham maybe seems like the starter right now. And then David Ayala, Doyle, that's the big one. That seems like the big one. That seems like the succession plan for whenever it is, maybe never, the Diego Chara is not Diego Chara anymore.
Yeah. A young player who is very much in the Chara mold, and a guy who, when they signed him, a lot of people reached out to me and were like, yeah, Portland, they got this one right as well. And that, like, these are the same people who like the Santi Moreno signing, which looks really, really good. So they're... Look, they're easing into a new era here. It's still the old guard is still on hand, and I still think the most important players in this lineup are Chara and Blanco and the other Chara and Mabiala. But you're starting to see them sort of build a foundation for what comes next as well. While at the same time, like, Ayala could very well end up winning the starting job next to Chara. And like being a massive asset this year as they do try to push for that cup.
You want that to be Williamson, right? That was the spot he looked like he was ready to step into. There's question marks whether he'll be healthy or not and what you'll get from him. Paredes is a really good fill-in, but he does not affect the game in possession. And so if you can get an upgrade alongside Chara, that's an opportunity also just to rest Chara's legs. I think Portland, to me, is the biggest question mark this season. While they have not changed a lot, it also feels like they've changed drastically, and maybe it's just seeing Diego Valeri's name, but is Nish Gota a star? Is Felipe Mora going to put up the goals? Obviously, I've questioned him, and Anders loves to remind me of it. Can Moreno take a consistent step? And he was an incredible addition last year, and that was just his first year. Is he a go-to player? There are a lot of question marks around this team. They solidify things defensively at the end of the year. Can they play that way over the course of the year? I could kind of go on, and you add into that, you might have a starting goalkeeper who didn't play professional soccer last year. That's not ideal.
Now, we'll get to do they have the right back news yet? Is like Claudio Bravo and Jose Van Rinken? Is that
the rumor
done?
Is Van Rinken is done to come back.
Okay.
Bravo's a full-time
player. He's signed permanently, but it's Van Rinken at TBD.
Both of them improved towards the end of the year. Both of them cleaned up their games, but they simplified their jobs. They didn't cover as much ground. They didn't get forward as often. But again, they didn't give up the mistakes that were shooting them in the foot early in the season.
If you look at their depth chart right now, assuming Blanco is going to get done, from top down, they're basically too deep with quality everywhere, other than maybe center back and maybe the outside back spots. Like the back line would still be the concern. Like back line and we'll get to goalkeeper, but
so five spots are questionable.
Yeah, okay, yeah, but like, it's a really good six spots up top. Very exciting from the striker to the six, but yeah, we'll get to more of that in a second.
A lot of that depends on whether Blanco's healthy.
Right? Correct.
And that's the whole thing this offseason is the deal was supposed to be done a month ago, but then reported, I think, first by Taylor Twellman that there were some knee issues. When they scoped his knee, they saw, some red flags in there. And then there was Boca Juniors was reportedly interested, and then they backed out because of the same thing. And now it does look like the deal is going to get done. But he's in his mid-30s, and apparently that knee is not great. And it's a lot to ask a guy who has been basically MVP level when he's been on the field the past 3 years to be that again. And the difference between the Timbers with Blanco last year versus without was massive. They were like 2.2 points per game when he played. That's not just Shield level. That's like set a new record for single season points level. When he didn't play, they were down around like 1.1 points per game, which is miss the playoffs, maybe drop into Wooden Spoon territory. And like on-off splits are like, it's a sledgehammer of a stat because there are always other things that affect it. But like, this was the first time in the decade that Portland have existed as an MLS team that someone other than Diego Chara was the most important player on this team. And that guy is 34 years old and has string cheese knee. That is like, it could work out. You know, like they have kept Chara running at tip-top shape for a decade now. But it's like it's a huge worry if you're a Timbers fan. And like there's not an obvious way to replace a guy who is that essential.
Is it just you go play like a 4-4-2 and you just have, Espria and Santi Moreno or Yimi Chara or whatever it is, just stretching the field, and then Moreno's go to up top, and Chara and Williamson or Paredes or Ayala really just hold water in the midfield. I mean, isn't the obvious route what often happens this team and what often happens with Gio, which is like, I guess we're just going to counter you to death and be pretty good on set pieces.
I mean,
like,
they had all those guys last year, and it didn't work when Blanco wasn't on the field.
By the way, 7 goals, 7 assists in 1,182 minutes in the regular season. Jeez. For Blanco, he had 2 goals in 3 games in the playoffs. So, I mean, he can still, even with string cheese knee, which made me laugh just a little bit, even though I hope he's healthy and nothing happens physically, as I hope for every player. But when he's on the field,
he's amazing.
He is absolutely incredible, like a magician. So I hope for MLS, I hope for the Timbers that Sebastian Blanco is able to keep it rolling for a full season. That probably means a lot of rotation, so they're probably going to need to figure out how they're going to do it without him, if they have to, over the course of time, or if they need to just put him on the bench for a little while. All right, mailbag question. Two starts kept Portland from being truly elite. Slow starts caused by keeping it from being truly elite. Slow starts caused by late arrivals to the roster and an inability to effectively change to a more proactive style. Is there any hope under current ownership that either of those change?
I think you'd say most of the moves have already been done for this team, right? Last year, the issue was Nierskota had the ACL. Blanco had the ACL, so there's nothing you could really do. And then Moreno's already been brought in, and then the other U22 signings already been made. It sounds like Van Rinken should be through the door before the season starts. So I think most of that's already sort of been fixed. But the question is just individual improvement for most of those guys to be able to get to that next level.
I'm not even sure I completely understand that question. Not gonna lie,
I went for it.
Yeah, you did your best.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. Help guide us through the goalkeeper situation, Doyle. What is going on here? Steve Clark off to the Houston Dynamo. You've got David Bingham in. You've got we've got Justin Vomsteeg in, which is an incredible name. We've got Alhaz Ivacic in, which I probably said that incorrectly, and I'm sorry.
I think it's Ivacic.
None of them played it.
Ivacic.
Okay, Slovenian, 28-year-old Slovenian goalkeeper there. Played 5 games last year. I mean, none of these guys played a ton of minutes last year. So it sort of feels like this is a rotation situation, and our over-under for the Timbers is 17.5 starts for any one goalkeeper.
Yeah, I'm going to assume, like, they didn't burn an international roster slot on Ivicic for, to have him there as a backup. I'm going to assume that he is the presumptive starter, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if he's going to be good. Steve Clark was very, very good over the last few years. Everybody's going to remember the mistake in MLS Cup, and that's a bummer because, like, he's been a top, you know, 7 or 8 goalkeeper in MLS for the duration of his stay in Portland. I don't know if Ivicic is going to be that level. Bingham is not that level. Vom Steek has been a really consistent, above average to very good USL keeper. Maybe they see something there to explore. And I mean, Schulte's a kid. He was in very much over his head last year. I'll hit the over for 17.5 starts for any of those guys. It'll be Ivicic, I think. But I do think that you're going to see a downgrade year over year from Portland in goal. And that is one of the issues, because for a team that likes to be on the back foot and play reactively, they don't defend well in the box. They didn't anyway for most of last year. They did down the stretch and into the playoffs. And then they ask a lot of the goalkeeper. And that's not a great thing if you're sort of rotating between 3 or 4 guys who look like backup goalkeepers at this point.
This is fine meme, Dave. What could go wrong?
Sebastian Blanco has no knee. Larice Mabiala will be 35 when you enter the MLS Cup playoffs. Diego Chara will be 95. Nia Shkoda's not a go-to star player. He's just a solid striker. And the goalkeeper situation, as I said, this is the biggest question mark to me. Inter Miami's like its own thing. but this, in terms of teams we're genuinely talking about in an MLS Cup or a playoff, I don't even know. This is the biggest question mark team to me. And it's a team that we've always known what an answer could be over the last 5 years. We didn't know if we'd get it. We didn't know if we'd see it. But you knew who was there, what they were capable of if put in a specific situation. I don't know that that's true this year.
What's your prediction, Doyle?
Playoffs.
Homer away to start.
It feels like this is a team that's going to have to go on the road again. Like, they're not as good as they were last year, and they spent most of last year's playoffs on the road, right?
Yeah, they were the 4th seed.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Yeah, Nashville comes in, maybe Minnesota are better, Vancouver are better. Uncertainty. I'm going to say they're still they're going to hold steady. 4th seed.
I'm going to say they play a meaningful decision day game.
I mean, don't most, Dave? It's a very strong.
Portland was the only team this year.
That's true. Yeah, but that's the whole point. They're the only team. That's an extremely strong limb
to get in the playoffs.
Yeah, you're like on the skyscraper with the glass bottom up there. They're like, oh my god, it's dangerous up here. But no, it's not. Safe spot for you.
Weaves, just building there.
All right, cool. DC United, 2021, the haiku. Benny equals legend. But it's time to get vertical. Can Hernan get more? He did get more. Here is the 2022. The wingbacks are fun, but regression incoming. Pressing for playoffs. Wasn't my favorite. Not going to lie. It feels like maybe this year is going to feel a little bit like down the stretch for DC. Doyle, it just, you look at their key signings. They got the left back in that's been at Loudon. They got Brendan Heinzeich done. Brad Smith via trade. I don't know, Carlos Tevez, like most of it's been seemingly outgoing, obviously Paul Areola being the biggest one of those. By the way, congrats to Paul, he got engaged and he got a new contract with FC Dallas, so things are coming up Areola of late. What's the big vibe that you have around DC right now?
Doesn't seem great. Areola was, I think, their best run of play open play attacker last year. I know Ola Kamara put up huge numbers, but he had like 8 penalty kicks. Kevin Paredes, look, he developed players like that with the intent to sell them for big money to big teams, and that's what they did, and they should be applauded for it. And they went out and they got a guy in Brad Smith who they, you know, in theory can replace Paredes. But if you, you know, Sounders fans know Brad Smith is not the most consistent attacking threat from left wing back. And in Hernan Losada's system, you need to have consistent attacking threats from both wing back positions. The other thing is, like, a lot of what worked last year, especially up that right side, came from Andy Nahar being healthy and playing that position in a way that I've never seen it played in MLS. Well, betting on Andy Nahar being healthy year over year has unfortunately never been a good bet. And that's one. And two is, like, there's tape. There's tape now. You know what to expect when you're playing against DC United. And then there's one more thing. And it's the New York Knicks thing. I don't know if you're aware, Weeby, but the Knicks were very good last year because they had a coach who demanded 110%, and in year one, players 110% bought into that. In year two, if it drops to 95% under that coach, that team suddenly stinks. Gasman doesn't pay much attention to the NBA, so he doesn't know this. He's
yeah, it's been a painful year for myself and fellow Knicks fans. We, you know, the amount of time and energy I've devoted to that franchise over the course of my lifetime.
To be clear, there are no French players on this roster for DC, so they may not be looking at the same regression issues that the Knicks dealt with.
The point is, though, Hernan Losada asks a ton of his players, and he got it last year. And players sometimes have trouble matching that in year two. And then the other thing with DC United is, like, this team is decimated by injuries every single year. Doesn't matter who the coach is, doesn't matter what style of play. It's like they just lose more games to injury. I think that, like, There should be alarm bells ringing if you're a DC fan, because put this on paper compared to almost any other team in the East, and it doesn't look great. It just doesn't look great.
Well, we'll know more here. I think this, I want to say this week is body scan week at DC. I'm just kidding. I don't know. Oh, if
I was like, is that true? That's yeah, great,
no,
that you know.
Yeah,
that.
It might be. No, I know they were big into the scans last year. So we'll see if those guys are committed, if they've been staying away from red meat and the like. Star Spotlight, Julian Gressel. We'll get to Edison Flores here in a little bit. 34 games last year, big bounce back season for him. 2 goals, 13 assists, among the most key passes in MLS. He was 3rd overall. Game plan was basically like, get vertical. And when you're getting vertical, find his feet, and he will whip in a really difficult ball to deal with into the box. One of the best crossers this league has really probably ever seen, Julian Gressel. So he is our star, and that's good for Julian Gressel. That's maybe not as good for DC United overall. We'll talk about that more later. 2,222 player to watch, Moses Nyman. Turned 18 last year. He played 19 games, 800 minutes, started out with some starts, then became an off-the-bench player. But it looks like he's got a path to start this year, because Junior Moreno may not be coming back. Looks like it's probably Russell Knauss and him. What do we think about this season for Moses Nyman? What can he do? What can he show? Where can he kind of set his personal trajectory?
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Okay, I was just making sure. I was waiting, and then I zoned out. He can set himself as a guy who can affect the game consistently. And as a young player, right, you come out with energy. You want to be around the ball. He's shown on-ball skill that is already at an MLS starter level. He just has to be able to cover the right ground, to make tackles, to fill in the right areas. And I think with Hernan Losada's system, it sort of makes it easy, because you're always going forward and you're always attacking in one direction. And I think he's got a great partner in Russell Knauss, if he can stay healthy, to be alongside him, who can be solid. And Nyman, at the youth ranks, is as special as any center mid that we've seen. And so I think he can be a special player for this team. And I hope this is the year to make the jump. You did ignore my boy, Ted Kudipietro.
Teddy KDP.
Getting the homegrown too. He is a baller and he fits perfectly for Losada's system.
Where does Teddy KDP play for Losada? You think he's...
I think he'll be one of those two underneath guys.
That's what I thought too, yeah.
And he's like a high-pressing attacking player. And he's just all over the place, silky smooth on the ball, confident. If this is the year for him, I think he could jump the Griffin Yao in terms of expectation and excitement around DC.
What does Nyman need to improve on this year, Doyle?
Physicality. He's a little kid, you know, and he looked like it at times, but he's got to figure out how to impose himself just a little bit more and come out of some of the. If you're playing in central midfield, you gotta win the ball more. And he struggled with that. But a lot of young central midfielders struggle with that. I think he sees the game well. I think he knows where to be and when to be there better than most at his age. And because of that, combined with both his on the ball, like he's Nagby-esque, I should say, on the ball, his ability to ride challenges and get away from pressure. And then he has like a better range of passing. Like his range of passing is like in the gym. So he checks all these boxes, but if you're net negative defensively, it is hard to play there week after week after week. If he can check that box, DC has a chance, like they have a chance to have another $7 to $10 million sale to a big team because he's that kind of talent on the ball.
Over under. Actually, Maybag comes first.
Ooh, can we just say real quick, the Kevin Paredes video, have we talked about this?
Oh, no, we haven't, but that was a special... Like,
when he left the club and he chokes up and he's crying, talking to the team, saying how he always dreamt of playing for DC, playing in front of the fans, playing with legends like Steve Birnbaum and Bill Hamid. It is everything that this league wants and should be and can be. And it's one of the heartbreaking things about DC struggling. Is like culturally where they sit in that region, a soccer hotbed, their history. It's all incredible. And we need them to get back there. But everything about that Kevin Paredes video is everything I want the future and current of MLS.
James Lambert knows a little bit of something about that culture and those fans and what it means to them. He asked, DC has made major moves this offseason. It appears they may make more, but will having a new star players arrive late to the club cost United in another early season swoon?
Yeah, they signed the DP to a pre-contract, so you're getting a high-level player for cheaper, but he's not coming till halfway through this season. And that is a huge question mark for this team. If that's your Paul Areola replacement, now you're only getting 50% of the season out of him, especially in a year in which the start of the season got moved up. So I think the right move is to find the guy you want for your club, and he's only 26 years old. This should be a long-term signing, but it's reasonable to ask, if that's going to put them too far behind the eight ball to start the year.
Taxi Fontas, we should say, pre-contract. Greek national team forward signed from Rapid Vienna in the Austrian Bundesliga. He's going to be their highest paid player.
That's where you go.
It's either that or Poland, man. It's like one or the other. You got to choose one. You got to do one of them. So he's 26 now, and he'll be 27 later this year. But it could be a big signing for them. We'll wait to talk about him more until he gets there. We'll talk about Edison Flores now, though. This is going to be the over-under at 13.5 combined goals and assists for Edison Flores. I just Googled Edison Flores just to see what would come up. You know, they do the people also ask section of like, hey, how did you get to this point? What happened to Edison Flores? Is Edison Flores injured? What team does Edison Flores play for? He hasn't played a ton.
David Espina knows.
That's true. Big goal. Big goal in Como Bowl World Cup qualifying. Just has not ever worked so far, mostly due to injuries, but also because of form for Flores in DC. He's played 1,800 minutes in 3 years. He has 2 goals and 8 assists.
Oof. Yeah, I think
13.5.
I'm gonna hit the under again. I just like he hasn't been able to stay healthy for too long now.
I'm going to go over going into a World Cup year. Peru looks on track to qualify again. He was the leading light for them 4 years ago. He's been injured enough. He's in his prime. For all my Peruvians, I'm going to say he does it.
I'm gonna say under. I want to be on side David. I just you just
bro,
look at the track
shady
record
over here. Everything's nice on this.
Yeah, yeah, but you know what? When the storm clouds roll in, you're gonna be left without an umbrella. I'm over here. I'm under shelter. I'm ready for the rains to fall. We'll see what happens with Edison Flores. How about this? This is fine meme. Is it what? It's basically the health. It's lack of top end talent. It's your best players coming in late.
They're still shopping Ola Kamara apparently, and like it's not clear that they have an adequate replacement lined up.
There has been rumors about Michael Estrada, who is a starter for Ecuador.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't, again, rumors, I don't know what that means. And Michael Estrada's agent might just be using that to make money. But
an agent
that has been out there. yeah. The other part that goes into it is obviously Breon's gone now, but Birnbaum has not been healthy. Bill Hamid's getting up there. So on top of all of the issues in the attack and everyone else, you could see another year with Tony Alfaro's getting minutes and Hindsight and whatnot along that back line, which is not an MLS playoff level.
Okay, that's predictions then. So do you think they're an MLS playoff level?
No.
I do not.
You had kind of teased earlier, Doyle, we were talking about the old ye olde spoon. Do you think this is a spoon candidate, or do you think that they will fight their way above that designation?
I think this is a spoon candidate. And by the way, Michael Estrada last year, the Apertura in Liga MX, he scored 0 goals and had 0 assists.
Yeah, but he had 2 goals in World Cup qualifying.
Oh, there you go.
Over the last week, yeah. People only watch international soccer, Daryl. Everyone knows that.
That's where you get the
good deal.
I just like Felipe Martins and Junior Moreno gave them a lot of good minutes last year. Paul Areola and Kevin Paredes gave them a lot of good minutes last year. It's, you know, Andy Nahar was healthy last year. It's tough to see this team taking a step forward. I think they're much more likely to take a pretty significant step backwards, especially because I think the rest of the East is better, especially the bottom of the East compared to last year.
I'm going to agree with you as a non-playoff team. I am not going to extinguish all hope in the nation's capital and call them a spoon contender. We'll let them get to that themselves, but I don't think this
is a
playoff.
Did we even talk about the Tevez thing?
Not really. I mean, what? How old is he? Like,
he's 38. He's 38. He hasn't played. He hasn't played soccer since last June. So if he does sign, he'll be almost a year without having played soccer. The reporting from Pablo and Felipe is like it's 25% likely. It would be on a TAM deal. I mean, he would fit. It's like the Josie thing, right? If the Revs made this signing, or NYCFC made the signing, or Seattle made the signing, you'd be like, yeah, they just want 1,500 minutes from him. They want to use him as a super sub. It makes a lot of sense for a team in that position who just wants that extra bit of firepower to put them over the top and into, you know, championship favorite type of thing. But for a team in DC's situation, this would be confusing.
I'm not seeing a single double-digit goal-scoring season across all comps
since 2015. Since
Juventus in 2015. Yeah. That's across Boca, Chinese Super League, and then back to Boca. I see only one season during that time in which he's played more.
Because he only played Copa Lib.
Than 17 games.
He literally just played midweek and never played on the weekend half the time. This is one of those signings where the contract will matter. Right. We're reaching a point where, yeah, there's some big names that will come into this league. And if you don't pay them a ton and it's not a thing you're basing your team on, it's fine. But if it's a TAM deal, and as Doyle said, with the way this roster is structured and the rumors around Ola Kamara, although, by the way, season before, Michael Estrada, 11 goals, year before that, 19 goals. So, all right.
How much is Michael Estrada's guy paying you, man?
Yeah, right.
Listen, when I see talent, I know talent.
Yeah, he's like, all right, hit him with that 2019 number, though. Hit him with that 2019. What do you have then? All right, let's do our extra time top five.
Said the Josie starting 3 games at the World Cup.
No, whoa. Who's that? Who's what? Me? No, not me. Box-to-box midfield is what we're on today as we run down our top fives at every position in MLS. Do you want to walk us through what the list is that we settled on, Doyle, and express both agreement and or frustration with what the group was able to settle on?
Yeah. Marc-Anthony Kay, number one. That was not unanimous, and I think it's an argument that the number two guy last year actually had a better MLS season, but I think now that it's Kay's, it's clearly his job in Robin Fraser's 4-3-3, and he'll have had not just the last few months last year, but also a full preseason. I think he's number one. He's the best box-to-box midfield guy in the league. Anibal Godoy is number two. He was awesome last year. He's been awesome for Panama in World Cup qualifying as well. Alejandro Bedoya, number three, ageless, had as good a year last year as he ever has, and he did it across multiple competitions once again. And that, like, those three guys were, I think, were unanimous in the top three for us, right? And then there was a lot of division over the final two. We settled on Darlington Nagbe at number four. I did not have him in my top five. And Christian Roldan at number five, and I didn't have him in my top five either.
Who did you have, before we dig into those, who did you have?
I had Keaton Parks, who is somehow still just wildly underrated. He was so good last year for NYCFC. The thing is, though, this year he might end up playing more as a six. With James Sands gone, even last year when Sands couldn't play as the six, Ronnie Dyla actually used Parks as a number six. I love him, though. He's fantastic. And then Coco Carrasquilla, another Panamanian. Like Godoy, he's been fantastic in qualifying. And he, I thought he was really good in limited time last year for Houston as a go-everywhere, do-everything ball progressor and connector. I mean, Nagbe and Roldan are clearly right in that group. I have no problem with them being in the top five. I just kind of value different things.
Injury probably keeps Eric Williamson out of this. He might have had an opportunity to push into this group last year. It occurs to me that maybe Victor Wanyama, would he be here?
Well, if you...
No, he's a six.
I don't think we're putting... No. Yeah,
he's...
Not next to Sam Piet.
He's played as a six to me. All right.
This has been the
either way he's not in the convo as one of the best five on his position.
Yep. Okay. Could Kyle Alexandre be here if he is healthy over the course of the year?
I didn't think he was that great last year. I like there's talent, but I wasn't blown away from him or by him.
The one to me that could sneak in here is where Leggett plays, how often he plays, how good he is. I think he's a guy that can get into this conversation. I love Pablo Ruiz. I will always love Pablo Ruiz. Pablo Ruiz would start next to Marc-Anthony Kay on David Goss's team. I would just, because I play 11-8s, so it'd be fine. That's a name that I had. And then what was my other one? I think that may have been it.
Well, you know, if I was voting with my heart, it would be top five of just Roger Espinoza.
Yeah,
just over and over and over. Just nothing but Roger, period.
You know who's very Roger?
Walk us through Nagbe.
So the debate, I don't know if we said this, the debate around Roldan was that he didn't really play here
right
last year.
This has been the challenge on both box-to-box and sixes. It's like, it's a little bit muddy sometimes as to what the actual positionality of some of these guys is. And it changes.
So it's us projecting will he play and then adding in just, I think for me with Roldan, you're just talking about pure talent. And that's the same with Nagbe. Obviously, the production wasn't there last year. The team struggled. Nagby's probably the cleanest pure soccer player in the league. And Roldan is one of the most effective players in this league. He's effective at every position he plays. If he plays there full time as an eight this year, I think he can be one of the top five in this league.
Yeah, I was on the side. I mean, I think I came in and mine was the vote that pushed Roldan into this group. It's hard for me to make a top five in this list if he's going to play that position and not have him there. I understand what our discussion was, which is that he's much better sort of in the half spaces, sometimes wide, floating a little bit, using his movement to unbalance teams. And oftentimes that was a 10 last year. But I think next to Joao Paulo, with Nico, with Rusnak in that Sounders team, if you're just talking about straight performances in 2022, I think that he will be in this group. So that's our top five. Marc-Anthony Kaye, 1. Anibal Godoy, 2. Alejandro Bedoya, 3. Darlington Nagbe, 4. And Christian Roldan, 5. Of course, feel free to argue with us about this on Twitter. It's been really fun to do so. 401-206-0MLS. ExtraTimeAnimalSoccer.com. You can get at us that way as well. Take us through the mailbag, Dave, and then we will bid adieu.
Sorry, I was just knocking Anders down there and protecting my number 10 in Matt Doyle in the chat as he gets questions.
We got to find a way to make that like part of the YouTube where it's just like a live running thing. We're going to have to probably would have to edit Anders a little bit.
Especially if you have to edit David when you talk about the Knicks. My goodness, he was working very blue in the chat. I didn't realize you were such a fan. Aren't you enjoying this season? Back when the Knicks beat the Celtics on opening night, you sent me a lot of texts. You haven't been texting as much since then, David. It's really weird.
He said
Also, I'd love to go back through the group chat of when the Celtics were up by 25 when the Knicks played head-to-head, and then over the course of the fourth quarter into OT on that one, too. Let's go back to D.C. Jason sent us some beer, I think, at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah, we did. Awesome. Yeah, I remember.
We split?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. We split it, I think.
So the question is, do you need more?
We don't need beer handouts. While we appreciate any and all beer handouts, we don't need them. What I will say is that I hope that this year we're able to get out into the world a little bit more and travel to games and stadiums. And if that's the case, I will always take a beer, and I will be happy to buy a beer in return as well. It's not one-way traffic.
And here's your soccer question. With all of the off-season high-dollar transfers out of MLS for many clubs and the nearly same amount of expensive international and domestic additions to our clubs, will this season be one that's remembered as a Beckham-type turning point in people's minds?
It feels like it's a big turning point in my mind. I'm not sure that... Look, the thing about David Beckham's arrival is that it was like... It spread across a lot of different... cultures, not just like our little North American soccer culture. It went everywhere. So I'm not sure that it will be remembered in that same way because, I mean, look, like the branding and just like the face of it won't be the same. But that also depends on the players that go overseas and what they're able to accomplish. Like if some of these guys go overseas and do incredible things, if they affect the United States or Canada or whatever it is in the World Cup and they have big coming out moments in that way, it might be. It might be remembered that way. I don't know. But I feel like overall, this is going to be the change that comes from this is going to be more rapid and noticeable than the change that came from the Beckham signing. Because I feel like though the rules changed in a big way, it still took about 10 years for there to be like widespread team by team use of the DP rule at a level that would penetrate consciousness in markets all the time. You know, because I remember some DP signings of the past, like in the early days. You know, we don't; those are like trivia answers now. Those aren't
Luis
things. That, those aren't Angel touchstones necessarily.
Lundin.
Yeah, Jefferson.
Don't see my guy Mustafa charge you like that.
Yeah, Jefferson in Kansas City. There's just a bunch of like sort of no names in that sense.
It's a different.
So I think this is bigger. This is like.
Yeah,
it's cultural. It's a ground shift.
It's a different. It's more of an evolution rather than a turning point. I think, and because the Beckham rule, the DP rule, was a turning point. It was literally a rule written into the MLS, you know, bylaws at that point for the type of player that you could then go out and break the bank for. And obviously, you're right. It did take some teams a while to figure it out. Some still haven't. But like that was just a hard.
Has DC ever signed a good DP?
I mean, I thought Wayne Rooney was a really good DP.
Luciano Emilio as well. Sorry.
Well, but they didn't.
Hell yeah. But there it is. Luciano Emilio.
They signed him as a DP. They got him in the year before the DP rule, and then they upgraded him. But anyway, that was very much a hard and fast moment where. The rules changed, and this is what you could do now. Whereas this is just an evolution. It's what we talked about last month. This transfer window has represented MLS jumping fully into the great game, the global transfer market. And it took 15 years from the institution of the DP rule to get here, but we're here now. And given the amount of resources that are put into developing academy players and the amount of know-how compared to even 5 years ago, it's night and day. So I don't think it's going to slow down. So I think it's okay to remember this transfer window as a turning point if you want to. But to me, it's been more a process of steady building over the past 15 years, but really the past like 10 or so, it's been concentrated and it's starting to pay off.
The turning point might be the recognition of both European and South American clubs, super clubs in South America, of the value of MLS talent and the fact that they have to spend significantly to sign that talent, right?
I think the, like, I that think might the, be the I turning think the point. Real turning point is MLS teams realizing the value of that talent first and foremost, and investing in it, and seeing that the Red Bulls in 2015 and, you know, Philly over the past few years, and RSL had a number of good years. You could win with homegrown players if you invest time and hashtag player kids. That had to come first, and now that that has happened, the rest of the world has jumped in. And so thank you, Alfonso Davies. That's what it really comes out. Thank you, Alfonso Davies, for being that good. Because now everybody wants the next Alfonso Davies and they're coming here to look for him.
All right, let's talk national team for a second before we finish. David from Columbia, South Carolina says, slightly hot take from the USA-Honduras match. Lucas De La Torre is the man we need in midfield to unleash McKennie's attacking potential. Box to box, sideline to sideline. Why have we not seen more of him to date? I would push to see Acosta if Adams is still hurt. McKennie and De La Torre in midfield with Musa, Pulisic, or Weah on the wings. Now, answer this question, but also I want to actually touch on the, do you want to ever see Musa on the wing for the U.S.?
Never, ever, 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 ever. Like Moose is he's a central midfielder, man. He's an eight. De La Torre appears to be a really good number eight as well. Bear in mind, it was against a Honduras team that is the weakest in the region by far. They were playing a 4-4-2, so they were always outmanned in central midfield. I like De La Torre a lot. I have him behind Musa on my depth chart. It's not going to change because of one game at home in a freezer. That said, for me, De La Torre starts against Mexico. McKennie doesn't start. Adams doesn't start. None of the starters in that game, none of the regular starters should start in that game other than in goal. Over the history of the hexagonal, which is now the Ocho, you don't get a result the game after you play at the Azteca. No team does that with any high level repeatability. And the most important game for the U.S. in the next window is that home game against Panama, which comes just days after playing in the Azteca. So full squad rotation at the Azteca. That means De La Torre starts. So you get to see him there.
You're speaking to my brain, but my heart rejects it in every way. Like,
That's great. So you don't want to go to the World Cup again. You don't want to see the U.S. at the World Cup, because this window, the U.S. need to beat Panama at home. They absolutely need to win that game. And then they probably need to take a point at Costa Rica to finish qualifying. And if you're going to waste those guys on a low probability outcome at the Azteca, then you probably don't deserve to go to the World Cup.
But what if we get Tata fired and Mexico's on the brink and we still get to beat Panama? No, there's an emotional side of this that's hard to ignore. Hopefully.
Maybe he's happy as long as Cameron Carter-Vickers is in that sideline.
If he can do it at Celtic and any other team he's out on
loan. He wants to see Christian Ramirez at center forward, Chris Mueller on one wing, James Sands, and Cameron Carter-Vickers in the middle.
All SPL?
That's the team. Yeah, that's the team you're looking for.
Can we get Harks in there, too, just for funsies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is Dylan Powers over there?
I don't know. I don't think so. Yeah. We'll find a way.
Says that we should end the show now.
Oh, okay, wrap after this. That's what he says. All right, we'll wrap it up. That's it for us. Any thoughts, questions, comments, etc., hit us up, 401-206-0MLS, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. I walked you through what's coming next, but we're doing Chicago, New England, Seattle, Miami on Thursday. CCL preview and a CCL reaction next week with a bunch of previews mixed in. For our prediction show, then week one. We were almost there, folks. We're about to have competitive games next week in CONCACAF Champions League. Enjoy. Have a great week. We'll see you on Thursday. Adios.